episode 118 of Fly Away, a weekly podcast from Outlander Travel about the thing we love most, travel. We're glad you're joining us this week. Our goal is to inform, educate, and inspire. We hope that tuning in for our weekly chats will help push you outside of your comfort zone and add some new experiences to your bucket list. We also welcome ideas for topics, so if there is something you'd like to hear more about, please let us know. My name is Lindsay, and this week I am joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Sandy and Laura. About an hour drive from the theme parks in Central Florida is a hidden gem that Sandy and I recently discovered. Safari Wilderness Park is a nature reserve and working ranch that features all sorts of animals you would find on safari. Because we knew we couldn't do it justice, we're thrilled this week to welcome Emily Jaffe to the show. Emily was our tour guide on our adventure and really impressed us with her obvious love of her job. We're sure she can inspire you to visit this amazing park, so let's get started. So, Emily, do you want to tell us a little bit about the history of the park?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Safari Wilderness is a 260-acre working game ranch, and we've had animals on the property since 2006. But we've only been open to the public for about 4 years now. And what our main goal is first off, conservation. You know, we think that preserving a lot of threatened and endangered species is obviously very important. But one of the main ways that we do that is through education. And so you ladies probably can attest to the fact that you may have learned a thing or two while you were out on your two-hour safari, or at least I hope you did. And so we kind of think that by educating people about species they may have never heard of before, they're going to be more likely to care about conserving them in the wild.
I loved it. I have to tell you, I didn't know what to expect because driving out there, it was kind of, you know, you're getting more and more rural. There weren't a lot of signs to direct us. And we, you know, when we pulled up into the parking lot, we were like, oh no, what have we done? but you know, once we walked in down that it's not a path. It's not a dock. It's like a bridge kind of
back to the area.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was just so cool once we got back there and saw, you know, the chickens running free and the pigs and all that kind of stuff. So where did the animals come from? Because there's a whole bunch of different kinds of animals.
Yeah, so we have over 500 animals on the property representing about 55 different species from 6 continents. And the majority of the animals that you guys saw when you were out here were actually born on site. However, you know, the owner of this facility has been running zoos all over the world in Australia, England, and even just down the road in Tampa for the past 30 plus years. So he's very well connected in the zoo world and, you know, has a lot of connections. We're also accredited by the ZAA, which is the Zoological Association of America. And so as being part of that organization, we'll oftentimes buy, sell, or trade other animals with those accredited institutions so we can keep our bloodlines nice and diverse.
So can you tell me a little bit about your background and how you got into this?
Sure. So I've been working with animals pretty much for as long as I can remember. But the way that I got involved with Safari Wilderness was actually through my previous job. I was living in North Carolina, Chapel Hill area, and I was working for a small private facility that specializes heavily in carnivores, so lions, tigers, wolves, that kind of thing. After working there for about 4 years, I met the owner of Safari Wilderness at a zoological conference, and we worked on a couple committees together, and I happened to be down in Florida over Easter visiting my grandmother and decided to come check out his place since it was just about an hour away. And once I saw what he was doing with his animals out here and kind of how he had the facility set up, I knew I wanted to be involved. And so just a few weeks after that, we had a phone call about getting me moved down to Florida and running the ranch. So kind of a dream come true.
Yeah, it seemed like I could really tell that you love it there.
Yeah.
When you did the tour. It was really cool. And I really loved the way you talked about some of the animals and your you know, your favorite thing, or this one is kind of a pushy one, this one's a little bit of a bully, the warthog story. Those are so cool. So, did you want to, are there any, like, special stories you want to mention about any of them? I know the warthog was looking for a girlfriend, right?
Yeah, so no love for Ricky, our warthog, just yet, but we do have some other good news to share with you guys. So since your visit just, you know, a week or two ago, we've actually had several babies born on site, one of which was a scimitar horned oryx, which was that first species you guys met, the ones that are extinct in the wild. So that was really exciting that we were able to add another animal to our scimitar horned oryx population here. That was very, very exciting, and baby and mom are doing very well. And we also had one of our very pregnant mares of the Austrian Haflinger horses give birth, which is who I was mixing the formula for just a few minutes ago. So as a, you know, 5-day-old foal, they eat about every 2 hours. So we've kind of been here working around the clock, taking shifts, making sure the little baby isn't too hungry.
What is a horned oryx? Is that like an owl?
It's an African antelope species. So they're typically, they would be found in the desert in Africa. But like I mentioned, they're extinct in the wild and have been since the late 80s. They were hunted to extinction for the beautiful horns that they have. But thanks to places like Safari Wilderness and a lot of the big game ranches out in Texas, they haven't gone extinct altogether, and there's a pretty good diverse population in captivity that they're actually using to do reintroduction programs, and those have been actually going really well. They kicked those off just about 4 or 5 months ago, and of course, you know, they're not being reintroduced into the wild. They're being reintroduced into the protected game parks back over in Africa.
So to talk a little bit, we did the safari tour where we were on a Jeep and we drove around, but you guys have some other kind of safaris. Can you talk about some of the different things you can do there?
Camelback Safari is an hour and a half long tour where you get to go through all four pastures and see a lot of the same animals that we saw on the vehicle tour. The main difference is that you're not in a vehicle, you're instead on a camel. And we have two different types of camels here. We have the Bactrian camels with two humps, and the dromedary camels with one hump. So you can kind of take your pick which camel you are interested in riding, and it's really nice because you get to bond with them since you're out there for about an hour and a half. Now, since you're riding a camel, you don't get to feed the other animals like we did on the truck tour. Mm-hmm. But you still get to see them, and you're interacting with animals in a different way when you're on the camel. We also offer kayak safaris, which are really great for those who are interested in the small animals. So you only get to go through one of the pastures, but you're kayaking around, and you get to hop off on one of our islands that has lemurs living on it once you get tired of kayaking. And you get to hang out with the lemurs, do a lemur feeding, and kayak around some more. And then once you get back to shore, you get to do a behind-the-scenes tour of our small mammal house. So you kind of get to see what goes into the day-to-day care of a lot of our smaller critters.
How many camels and kayaks do you have? Like, how many people at once could be taking those tours?
So we have four camels that are used for riding, and typically we try and keep it one person per camel. However, you know, depending on the size and age of the individuals, we might be able to do two. So with the two-humped camel, those are limited to just one person. You sit in between the humps. And then the dromedary camels, you typically sit behind the hump, but if you have a, you know, petite adult or a small child, they can fit in front of the hump as well. And for the kayaks, we have four kayaks. They're all two-seaters, so we could potentially do up to 7 people on the kayaks because, of course, you have to save room for your tour guide.
So you said you have 3 kayaks? Is that...
4 total.
Oh, 4 total. Okay. So one of the things that I thought was really cool is with the camels, normally when I see animals working and doing stuff like that, I feel a little bit guilty, you know, that they might be uncomfortable in some way. But you were saying that they really do like to work, kind of like horses.
So camels have actually been domesticated longer than horses have. They've been doing this kind of thing for thousands of years. Our camels are actually, like you said, they really love having a job. It makes them feel important. And we also give them lots of attention when we're preparing them to do the ride. So we spend about an hour and a half to 2 hours before the tour grooming them, brushing them out, getting them ready, getting them tacked, getting them all good to go. And it's funny because when we walk out to their pasture to go get them to start the whole process, we have their halters and lead ropes. And if we hold those halters and lead ropes up high, the camels see that from hundreds of yards away and they come running. They absolutely love it. Now, you know, like I said, we have four camels that we use for rides, and, you know, we always bring all four out because if, you know, even if we only had one person doing the camel safari, you know, technically we would only need to have the one lead camel out, but if you left the other three behind, they would be really sad and they'd kind of give you those puppy dog eyes. It'd be very similar to, you know, taking one dog for a walk and leaving the rest at home, and they all just kind of sit there at the door looking all sad. So we always bring all of them out, always give them all equal attention because they really like having that job.
You said you had four pastures. Is it like different continents in each pasture?
Kind of, yeah. So we have an African pasture, which is mostly African animals, and an Asian pasture, which is mostly Asian animals. We also have two kind of like specialized pastures. One is where a lot of our aquatic antelope species live, and so that one has a lot of water. That's where we do the kayak safari, and you'll oftentimes see them swimming and jumping through the water. The other fourth pasture is our forest pasture, where a lot of our forest antelope live. So they've got the biggest cypress dome in there where they can run in to hide or hang out to cool off or that kind of thing.
So I know we had the pleasure of doing the lemur feeding, and that was, I have to say, that was probably my favorite animal encounter I've ever had. I thought we were going to be a little more intelligent with our video recording because we were trying to, but I was just like, we were like 6-year-olds. What I wanted to ask about were the other little close-up account encounters that you can do with specific animals. I know there's more than just lemurs.
So the lemur feeding is definitely my favorite. You guys picked a really good one to participate in. But we also have some other interactive experiences that you can add on, where you can feed our budgies, which are a small, colorful bird, kind of like a parakeet. And we take you into their exhibit and we give you a popsicle stick with some of their favorite seeds stuck to it, and they fly right up to you, they'll land on your arm, land on the popsicle stick, and they all just go crazy over these seeds. We also do a guinea pig colony feeding, which you know, kind of sounds lame because a lot of people have guinea pigs as pets and, you know, feeding them is just another chore. But the way that our guinea pigs are housed, we have about 35. And whenever they see a human walking over with one of the big black bowls that we feed them in, they start making this squeaking noise. And when you hear 35 of them doing it in unison like that, it is so adorable. And, you know, we feed them things like carrots and romaine lettuce and timothy grass and stuff like that, and the way that we prepare the food for the feedings, we kind of make the pieces a little too big, and so a lot of times what you'll get is guinea pigs playing tug of war over a piece of lettuce or carrot sticks, and it sounds silly, but it's really adorable and cute.
So I ever heard one of the guys working there telling people that some of the guinea pigs were like former pets that people couldn't take care of anymore for whatever reason. So do you guys are you a rescue, like a guinea pig rescue?
No, that was actually, we just have one guinea pig that used to be someone's pet. And actually what happened was the original owner of this guinea pig came out just on one of our tours because she's an animal lover and, you know, likes to go to animal type attractions. And when she saw how our guinea pigs were housed and kind of how they're all together in a colony, what most people don't realize is guinea pigs are social animals. They like to live in groups. Mm-hmm. And so she kind of felt like, oh man, you know, here I thought I was spoiling my little guinea pig, but, you know, really I just didn't know that this is how they want to be. And, you know, that she should probably have some friends and, you know, she might like living outside instead of in a tiny cage in my bedroom kind of thing. And so, you know, she reached out to us a couple weeks after that. And, you know, you could tell she felt really sad about having to say goodbye to her guinea pig. But she knew that this was going to be an awesome setup for her. And she brought all these like toys and special treats and stuff. And it, you know, like, oh, just in case if she, you know, isn't comfortable right away. And we plopped that guinea pig down in the little outdoor area. Mm-hmm. And she immediately started, like, running up to the other guinea pigs, sniffing them, squeaking at them. She fit right in.
That's super cute. My husband has a thing against rodents, and he will not entertain the thought. My daughter wants a guinea pig so bad, but...
Oh, they're great pets. You got to get her two, though, but make sure they're both either both girls or both boys, or you'll end up with more guinea pigs than we have.
Yeah, well, like, we used to have this neighbor who had a kid who I felt so bad for her guinea pig. She would take it on the trampoline, and she would carry it around like a baby. And I mean, I couldn't believe that thing didn't bite her. It was so crazy how she just, yeah, I felt so bad for that thing. But yeah. So you guys are a working ranch, right? Do you guys eat some of these animals? Is that okay to ask that?
So, kind of, sort of. Our free-range chickens, we do, you know, sell their eggs at our gift shop. And if we ever have extras, we give them to the staff to take home. But we do raise cattle for beef, our Irish Dexter cattle. They're all the rage in the grass-fed beef community.
Yeah.
Really lean, good meat. Chef Gordon Ramsay rated it one of the top three types of beef in the world.
Wow.
And so, you know, we're not just like going out to the pasture and pulling one in each day. It's like a big deal to take the cow to the market. And they actually, even for being small heritage breed, they produce quite a bit of meat. And so, you know, I have had the Dexter beef before, and it is really good.
Well, I used to work for a solar company, and they were very, you know, environmental, obviously. But there was a farmer that was friends with the owners who would come in, and he would bring us meat like that. And, yeah, I mean, I loved visiting his farm. He completely loved his animals, but he did raise them to eat them, you know, so...
Yeah,
I think it's, you know, I think it's important for people to realize where stuff comes from. And, you know, and I'd much rather an animal be treated like that than, you know, what you see in these other places. So I think it's...
Yeah, no, it's, and that's kind of one of the things we educate about, you know, the exotic animals, like I was mentioning earlier. But we also, you know, like to kind of bring people back to their roots and remind them where their food comes from. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, we do a lot of work with field trips and summer camps. And a lot of kids these days really don't understand, you know, that eggs do come from chickens that run around like this. And, you know, hamburgers don't just come from McDonald's.
Right.
They come from cows, you know. And it's really kind of cool to be able to watch their faces as they kind of make the connection and put two and two together and realize that their food doesn't just come from Publix. It comes from animals and farmers and, you know, hardworking people and animals. So it's pretty cool.
Emily, do you guys have any, like, special events, like, you know, Christmas events or summer events or big farm days or anything like that, that if people were going to come down there, they might really enjoy this, you know, special thing that you're doing?
Yeah, so, you know, typically the way that our facility works is we don't want a whole lot of people coming in on any given day. So, like, when you all came out for your tour, you know, we limit the number of people that are on any given tour because we want to create that very intimate, personalized experience. However, you know, that might not always be what certain people are looking for, or it might be a little too expensive, or maybe for, you know, families who have small children, a 2-hour tour might be a little bit too long and attention spans aren't going to last. So what we do is around certain holidays, like we did a pumpkin safari during October, where on Saturdays and Sundays, instead of having to make reservations, you just showed up and we had a tour going out at the top of every hour. And so it's kind of like an abbreviated version of what you guys did. That way it's a little bit more, you know, family friendly for the kids. We sold the tickets on Groupon, so, you know, it was a little bit more affordable. And we also did a very similar thing with our Christmas safaris. So during the month of December, we had certain days where you could just show up and go out on an abbreviated tour. And we also have animal interactions and little crafts and things like that going on. But that's kind of a nice way for us to engage the local community, especially because we're pretty good about attracting, you know, the tourist crowd, but there are some people in Lakeland who still don't even know we exist. So yeah, we're trying to also embrace our local community as well.
And I noticed you had a little food truck there. Is that a traveling food truck? Is that a only open certain days?
Yeah, it's kind of only open certain days during our peak season. And actually, in that little food truck, we sell Dexter burgers from the Dexter cows that we
raise. I was going to say, whenever the cows go to market, that's
when it's open. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and you had also mentioned that you could do weddings and stuff, which I thought was really cool, in that big barn that is brand new.
Yeah, I'm actually in that barn right now, nice. And it's a 13,000 square foot, fully heated and air-conditioned space. It has beautiful windows that look out into our pastures, so, you know, folks, those rustic but elegant barn weddings are kind of all the rage these days. And mm-hmm. So it ties that in nicely and also has the animal aspect to it as well. So it's kind of got a little something for everyone.
You mentioned that you don't like to have big crowds there. What is the, what, how many people would you take on a day or in a group or?
It kind of just depends, you know. So on regular tours like what you guys came on, you know, we usually don't let the groups get much bigger than 20 people. But, you know, I mentioned that we do work with a lot of school groups and summer camps. And so obviously, you know, a lot of times schools will have more students than just 20. And we have several different sized safari trucks. So we kind of just bring out whichever truck is appropriate. So we have a couple, like, 48-seater buses. So we can have, you know, 200 kids out here at any given time. But, you know, with different buses going different routes. But on, you know, a typical tour day, you wouldn't expect more than 20 people to be in your group maximum.
Yeah, I think ours was, like, maybe 15. It wasn't, yeah. It didn't feel big. It was,
we were on the small bus, so right. It was, yeah, we had a nice size group.
Yeah. One of the other things I really loved was feeding the llamas.
Oh, gosh.
They were really cute, too. And so we were recording, and I feel really rude when I watch the video because Lindsay and I are, like, talking to each other, and you're talking in the background. But I remember you saying something about how they don't have top teeth. Is that, or do they not have bottom teeth, or?
Yeah, something? So, one of the reasons we feed the llamas on the tours is, A, because they have hysterical personalities. Oh, my gosh. They're so funny and expressive. But also because they're a pretty safe animal to feed. They don't have any top teeth in the front.
Right.
So all of the chewing action goes on kind of in the back near their molar areas. But they do have some bottom teeth up in front that you probably got to see. But
it's why they can spit so well, isn't it? Because they don't have any...
Yeah, nothing blocking the spit to come out, exactly. But
I get over how gentle they were and how soft their lips were. And yeah. They were so used to it. They were, like, sticking their lips to take it with
their lips. Yeah, their lips are prehensile, so they can, you know, reach out and grab stuff almost like little fingers.
So cool. Yeah, and they didn't spit at us.
Emily, I work with a lot of people who have all different kinds of different medical challenges and mobility challenges, some sensory challenge, folks on the autism spectrum disorder, folks who use wheelchairs. What is your accessibility for those folks with those kind of challenges?
So since we're a working game ranch, you know, our facility isn't, you know, exactly the most wheelchair accessible place. You know, we don't have, all of our roads aren't paved, that kind of thing. But we've hosted individuals, you know, with a variety of mobility concerns and, you know, different things like that. With our safari trucks, we don't have them equipped with any type of lift situation for a wheelchair. However, our staff is always happy to assist anyone in and out of the vehicle. And we've had, you know, folks who have been paralyzed to some degree, whether it was from the waist down or even further up. We've also had, you know, a 98-year-old woman ride our camels.
Wow.
Made me so happy. It was a bucket list thing, and she was such a trooper about it. She had, you know, two hip replacements you know, a bad knee and, you know, this, that, and the other, and she was still a good sport about it. But we also, you know, do a lot of work with kids on the autism spectrum because, as you probably know, you know, animals are oftentimes used in therapy and, you know, different kinds of exposures and things like that. And it's really extremely rewarding to watch, you know, kids who oftentimes maybe get frustrated easily because they have a hard time expressing themselves really connect with some of our animals. So that's...
Yeah, exactly. Does your ranch get any other type of funding? How do you fund your ranch?
So we are privately owned. We're not like most zoos that receive, you know, some type of taxpayer funding or anything like that. All of the money that we use to run the facility comes from the money that our visitors spend, whether it's, you know, booking their tour or feeding the lemurs or buying a t-shirt in the gift shop. Every dollar you spend here goes back to helping the animals in some way, shape, or form.
So, but you're not a nonprofit, right?
Correct.
Right, okay.
Do you have a Facebook page or Twitter or anything like that where people can...
We do. Our Facebook and Instagram accounts are just Safari Wilderness, and our Twitter is Safari Wild. So, you know, you can find us on a lot of different forms of social media. You know, we also always like to point people towards our TripAdvisor pages and things like that because, you know, of course I'm going to go on and on about how much I love this facility, but that's because I work here. It's always nice to kind of hear it from a visitor's perspective and just to kind of, I really enjoy reading what our guests have to say about their experiences because they all have little funny stories. And as I mentioned to you guys when you were here, no two tours are ever the same. And it's really kind of nice to hear what the guests take home from their experience.
How many days a week are you open, or what days a week are you usually open?
7 days a week. The only days we're closed are on Thanksgiving Day and Christmas Day.
So what is your peak season?
You know, it kind of ebbs and flows. We start getting pretty busy right around, you know, November as the snowbirds start to migrate down this way. And then, you know, around the holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, when we have lots of people coming to the state to visit their relatives. Mm-hmm. Our busiest week of the year is the week between Christmas and New Year's.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, people who are down here looking for something to do. Mm-hmm. January and February, it starts to kind of taper off a little bit, just in time for March, April, May, when we have a lot of our spring breakers coming down. That's kind of also when, you know, have a lot of our school groups who come out, their kind of end of year field trips. Summer is pretty steady. You know, that's when we do a lot of our Florida resident specials because not too many people are, you know, equipped to be outdoors for 2 hours in the Central Florida summer. So we do a lot for our Florida residents then. And you know, just in time to pick back up in fall when we start to get busy again.
And before we wrap up, I also have to ask, wasn't there a pregnant zebra when we were there?
Oh, there's pregnant everything here.
I just remember this one looking really wide, you know?
Yes, we have several pregnant zebra out here, but none of them have given birth since you guys have been here. However, uh-huh. I will definitely keep you in the loop because, you know, some of them look like they're about ready to pop any day now.
Yeah. Well, they look like that, like, earlier this month, too.
Yeah.
And you guys have a sister park, too, we should probably mention. Do a quick shout-out.
Yes.
Shout-out.
The Giraffe Ranch, which is in Dade City, Florida. It's only about 40 minutes away from here. Owned by the same guy. We're about five times larger, so we're 260 acres. They're closer to 55. And the way I kind of describe it is we're a much more epic experience where they're a little bit more intimate. They focus more on a lot of the smaller animals where we have a lot more of the larger ones.
Cool.
We'll have to go.
Do they have giraffes?
They do. And you get to feed giraffe on every single tour. So
I did some work in Zaire during the Rwanda refugee crisis. And unfortunately, it was right around the time when they were having to, they had to emergency fly us out of there because it was right when the Democratic Republic of the Congo was taking over.
Wow.
Ooh.
And so we wound up in Kenya, which is where we had flown into Nairobi, and with a few days on our hands, which they hadn't expected because I was doing kind of missionary work with the children. And so they took us to the ranch that Out of Africa was made about.
Oh, wow.
And, which is a giraffe ranch, and they have two of these, like, you know, like the 15-sided homes with the decks all around the edge, mm-hmm. and you can go up on the deck and buy a pellet or two, like you do for like the goats and stuff at zoos, except the pellets were probably 4 inches long and about an inch round. And you could feed them to them because, you know, you were right at the giraffe's face. You could feed them to them. And one of the guides, noticing I was a little bit more adventurous than the other folks, said, would you like to kiss a giraffe? And he said, absolutely. And he said, take a pellet and put it in your mouth and let it stick out and lean in. And the giraffe came over and got it out of my mouth.
So, oh, how awesome.
Zaire at that point had no running water, no electricity, no phone service, nothing. My husband hadn't talked to me. We'd only been married about 2 years. My husband hadn't talked to me in 6 weeks, and he'd heard about all the fires and the landmines and everything going on. And the first time I got to talk to him was like 3 hours later. They let us all talk for 5 minutes. And he said, oh, my God, are you okay? I kissed a giraffe. Oh, my God, it's a blessing. I kissed a giraffe. My time was up.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it was really cool. But like you were saying about the llama lips, the giraffes were kind of the same way, just as gentle as they could be.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to make sure we mention? I'm sorry, Lindsay. Did you want to ask a question?
Well, I was just going to circle back to the lemurs because I think about them every day and I know they miss me. Now they're in their little enclosure. I wanted to ask, how many do you have? Because it felt like there were a million of them. I know there weren't a million, but when they're all grabbing for grapes.
Yeah, so the aviary where you guys were, we have 6 lemurs living there. But as you probably recall, we've got several islands throughout the property that have some lemurs living on them. We also have a couple different troops of lemurs living in our night house. So we have over 20 lemurs on the property, 3 different species as well. So you guys were with the ringtails, but we also have the red ruffs, and we even have a brown lemur too. So...
So are they, how long have they been doing feedings with people?
You know, since we've been open. So since, you know, for the past 4 years. And I don't know if you remember the little young one who was in the aviary with you doing the feedings, but he isn't even a year old yet. So, yeah, so, you know, we've got lemurs of all ages that do the feedings. The mom was in there, the you know, the almost a year old baby. He was born last spring sometime, so he's just almost a year old, and all ages in between.
They were so cute, and their little hands when they grabbed you, oh my god, they were adorable.
They're so soft, and they grab your clothes, like, one was tucking on my dress, like, lady.
Lindsay, they do miss you, and if you just send 20 of your LuLaRoe items, they could all smell you, and they'd feel so much better.
Yeah, right?
I'd be happier with, like, a crate of grapes.
Yeah, right. That's exactly right. Send grapes, and they'll love you forever.
Send grapes. They really did have our. They did. It seemed like that they had the. They had our number though, because they knew.
Oh yeah.
There's. You could see their.
One of them reminded me of my dog. Actually, it's kind of funny to say, but I have two dogs, and they're both small, and one of them kind of pushes the other one around a little bit, and always wants to be the one grabbing the treat, and that's how I felt like that one lemur was.
He said that was the that the leader was female.
Yes, so lemurs live in a matriarchal society, so there's one dominant female who's in charge of the whole troop.
Okay,
so that's probably the bully that we.
Yeah, that's probably who it was.
Yeah,
just like
probably
my dog.
Was. She has to keep everybody else in line and make sure that. She gets the first grapes, and everybody else kind of falls in line behind her.
Yeah.
You know that if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. It's that same thing. If the queen isn't happy, nobody's happy.
So anything else you want to be sure to mention? Or
no, anything? Just no? That we hope you guys will come out and visit us. Awesome. Like we said earlier, we're open 7 days a week. All of our tours are by reservation only, so... Definitely check out our website or our Facebook page or sign up for our newsletter. There's lots of ways to stay in touch.
Awesome.
You've been an awesome guest.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
This was a lot of fun.
So, thank you so much for coming out. We were driving away and I was like, we should have asked her. So glad that you did. And hopefully anybody who's listening to this is truly a unique experience and definitely one I know that myself, I probably speak for Sandy, we'll never forget.
Yeah, it was great.
It was an amazing experience and it's very affordable, I think. And it's definitely a must do for Central Florida.
Let's
mention one more time the Facebook and the Twitter stuff so people can have it at the end of the podcast.
Website too, please.
Yeah, so our website is www.safariwilderness.com. You can find us on Facebook just by searching Safari Wilderness. Same thing on Instagram, Safari Wilderness. But our Twitter is a little bit different. It's Safari Wild.
Well, that is our show for this week. We welcome your comments and feedback on this episode, or any episode, really. To leave comments, please visit us at outlandertravel.com and then click podcast at the top of the page and find the episode you wish to comment on. Or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpodcast. Or just search for Fly Away. And please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. Thank you so much, Emily, for joining us this week. On behalf of Sandy, Laura, and myself, Lindsay, thank you for joining us here at Outlander Travel, and we'll see you next week. Gotta fly.
Thank you, Emily.
Thanks so much.